Welcome to the NFL Players Podcast. I'm Aeneas Williams, and I'm hanging out today with Kelvin Beachum. And we're talking about the roots of Mahalia, Texas, not Mahalia Jackson, the famous singer, and public speaking for different teams, but the impact socially, the impact as a player, the impact other players had on him. Let's listen in. Four teams, You're now with the Cardinals. What has that been like?
You know, it's been interesting to go into each organization, and each organization has its own culture, its own way of doing things, and its own fan base. You know, if you come to Pittsburgh, who I was drafted by, you know, you don't like coming to Cleveland because Cleveland is considered your redhead stepchild, and you better not lose to Cleveland.
Oh, you can't say that. We're recording in Cleveland, but we're
in Cleveland. No, that's how we treated Cleveland when we came to Cleveland.
I don't want to get us beat up.
I know. But you know, when I came to Pittsburgh, that was the culture. The standard was the standard when I got to Pittsburgh, and I think it was a great base for me as a young player, you know, coming into the league and being exposed to a very veteran, late in locker room. I mean, you have future Hall of Famers that were in that locker room. Troy Polamalu, who I know is coming up for coming into, you know, the Hall of Fame here, coming up pretty soon. James Harrison, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. So to be able to be a part of that particular crew was special coming into the National Football League. And then you realize that you evolve and you grow.
Right.
And then, you know, signed a one-year deal in Jacksonville, you know, during their rebuilding years before they ended up going to the AFC Championship, and then, you know, went to New York. And it was special being in New York. You know, taxes were a little rough, but
how about traffic?
Oh boy, traffic was that.
Do
that
you
was
drive
monster.
In New York? You play in New York.
You know, we stayed in Jersey. The facilities are in Florham Park, so we were kind of removed from being into the city. But it was very rare that I actually drove into the city through those tunnels and try to drive around in the city. You take an Uber, let the Uber take you where you want to go. You walk, you get dropped off, take a ferry inside and walk where you need to go. But it was special. It was a special time in New York, and it was great for me to really build within that particular community. And then, you know, now being in your first home base, you know, in Phoenix. And it's been special to be in the Sunshine State in the Valley, being able to build a family there and call, you know, Arizona kind of home base for a little while.
So I played with two teams, played with the Rams, 10 with Arizona, 4 with the Rams. Mm-hmm. But I never played again against the Cardinals while with the Rams. Mm-hmm. What has it been like playing against your former teammates?
Yeah.
Right? What's that like? How do you make that mentorship?
It's funny, man. The first time that I had to play when I left Pittsburgh, I didn't play, you know, Pittsburgh when I went to Jacksonville. But when I got to New York, I ended up playing Jacksonville those first two seasons when I was there in New York. I mean, it was weird because the same guys that I would practice against, you know, every day in practice, you know, for a year, is the same guys I was going up against in the game. And stuff that you would do in practice, I wouldn't say dirty stuff, but little shot here, little shot there that you would do in practice, just kind of messing around. You do it in a game and you think it's funny, but it's not funny. It's the real thing now. Right. So, you know, to experience that was interesting. To play Pittsburgh for the first time when I was in New York, that was, you know, kind of eerie feeling because that was the first time that I had played, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, since I left. You know, Cam Hayward, which I think is one of the most dominant defensive players in the league, was a guy that I fought every day as a rookie, you know, when I got to Pittsburgh. But we also grew as men, our families grew while we were in Pittsburgh, served on the NFLPA together, you know, have been nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award together. So we just had just a deep bond. But to play him in 2019, it was interesting. They came up to New York. I mean, anytime, you know, Pittsburgh fans travel, they travel in packs.
Heavy.
It was more Pittsburgh fans in MetLife Stadium.
What?
I mean, that's
in New York?
In New York, man.
Blasphemy.
But you know, sometimes that's just how fan bases are. You have some avid fan bases.
Not New York, though, Kelvin. Not in New York.
It had to be, you know, 45, 55. I mean, it was, when you see the yellow towels waving and you have to go on silent count at home, that's not a pleasant feeling. But, you know, we were able to win the game, and it's always great beating your former team.
That's like beating your little brother.
That's
right?
What I'm saying.
Exactly.
It's always great beating your former team, and most times I've been on the great side of beating my former teams.
You 10 years, mm-hmm. right? 10 years. you're so conscientious. You know, what I know about you being on those calls with the Players Coalition, Mahalia, Texas, in between College Station and Dallas, Texas. How many people?
7,500.
7,500. I didn't say 75,000. 7,500. How many of your graduating class?
About 115.
Where did you get this awareness of giving back, philanthropy? Where did that come from, Kelly?
You know, I had phenomenal parents. I think, you know, for me, everything starts with my family. I had a dad that you know, didn't have great education, but knew how to work on a car, still knows how to work on a car.
Wow.
Had a mother that, you know, raised four kids, you know, was working at a state-supported living center for mentally challenged individuals there in Mahia, where it was all about the community. It was all about how do we help each other together. And I remember many times when my mother would, you know, grill, have barbecues, and invite the entire community. And it came to a point where we used to say, you know, we're the Salvation Army over here, because she would just bring so many people over. And there was no color, there was no socioeconomic background. However you wanted to come over here, whenever you wanted to come by, if you just wanted to stop by for a hot link sandwich, you know, if you just wanted to stop by and get some, you know, we had these little huggies, these little burros that you know.
What's a hot link sandwich?
You know, just a hot link wrapped in bread, white bread,
okay.
Wonder Bread, or Miss Barrett's bread. You know, throw a little barbecue sauce on it, you know. And wrap it in foil, you know, a little hot link sandwich. But anytime, you know, anybody wanted to come over and just, you know, just grab a meal, they had that opportunity. And for me, it was great as a young person seeing that, even though, you know, we were struggling as a family, but it was great to see that and see how invested they were into the community. And that was something that was instilled in me and just had the ability to go out and execute on that as I went out and started to you know, build my own life and try to, you know, put my stamp on the world as I, you know, grew up and started to leave the house, go into college and, you know, from college into the professional ranks.
You know, one of the things with your generation of players, you guys are even more active as it relates to social injustice or just being aware. Some people say awoke.
Yeah.
Awoke. In the Mahalia, 7,500, did you guys have a divide there as it relates to Caucasian, African Americans? What was that like?
I mean, it was as simple as the railroad tracks. You stayed on one side of the railroad tracks.
Just that.
It's that simple.
That small amount of people still.
That simple, man. It's interesting. They just hired a new AD and athletic director for the football team.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother happened to send me a picture of the people who voted him in and the head coach. I was like, ain't much change. You know, all older white men. It's a younger white coach who just got hired. There's no diversity in ethnicity or in color that made a decision about, you know, who was hired. And the town is about a third. Caucasian, black, and Hispanic. So to see that there is still just something so simple, it's just from a hiring practice or a high school coach, that there is no diversity within that process.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, I wouldn't say it's eye-opening because I've been a part of it. I grew up in this.
I'm used to it. Part of the course.
It is what it is. And, you know, you hate to say that in that particular instance, but that's just the life that I came from. You know, if you lived on Hinchcliffe, which was, you know, that's where the upper class
gotcha.
Folks lived, you knew what Hinchcliffe meant. You didn't walk down the street
wow.
Hinchcliffe. You know, that was on the north side. You didn't, if you weren't supposed to be on that side of town,
don't go
on that side of town, you know? And that's just how it was. And that's Texas though. I mean, it's, you know, me and my wife have this conversation all the time. Is Texas the South or not?
Beautiful Jessica, right?
Yes.
I've been counting your years, 10 years in the league, 8 now, going on 8 with Jessica.
Yep.
So 2 years in, you get married.
Well,
right?
1 year. Oh, so pretty much.
1 year.
So we, 2012,
right.
I get drafted. 2013, in February, I propose on a Saturday. We get married on Thursday, and we've been married ever since.
So for all the active players, what advice, if you are public speaking to them, because we're going to talk about your public speaking, all right? I know you can articulate words and bring message with clarity. What would you say to your fellow active players if they say, hey, Kelvin, give us a talk about choosing a wife now that we're in the league, now that we have the fame?
Come on, give me your man, elevator.
I feel sorry for you, first and foremost.
Come on, man, we give hope here, man.
I'm trying to give you hope. I'm just being real, too. I want to be real with you. You know, I think you have to find somebody that, one, can take care of themselves.
I like that. Can take care of themselves. They're independent.
They're independent. Gotcha. And at the end of the day, they don't need you.
Gotcha.
Like, not to say that Jessica can just walk away. She can. But she's perfectly fine with saying, I can get my own, and I'm cool with that. And the thing is I think as a player, you should want...
You should appreciate
that you have a woman that can say, I can get my own, I'm fine, we're in partnership, we're building something together, you bring something to the table, I'm bringing something to the table,
gotcha.
And let's do life together.
Gotcha.
And I think that's something, especially if you're trying to get married in the league, you have to be able to find that, you have to be able to strike that balance of... somebody that's wanting to do something with you and you're not being the all in all, everything, the temperature in the house
right.
goes up and down based on your mood. Like, how can you find a way to make sure that y'all are doing something together? Because we know the statistics of, you know, what guys have done, what
right.
happens when guys are finished playing, the divorce rate and things of that nature. Like, you want something when the game is over,
right.
y'all are still... chugging along, doing something together,
right.
you know. And for me, that's what I look for. I look at, you know, I told you I had, you know, great people that I looked up to when
right.
I was in Pittsburgh. You know, people like Max Starks. Like seeing Max Starks and his wife, Tiffany Starks, how they built what they built while they were in the National Football League and what that looks like.
Seeing that.
Now they're right. on the outside of it
mm-hmm.
and they're still together, both still doing what they need to do to bring more life to them and their kids. You know, seeing Heath Miller, him and his wife, Brett Kiesel,
right.
him and his wife, how they built things while they were in the league, and they're continuing to build those things, you know, now that they're out of the game. And I think you have to be thinking about the end in mind, even though you're getting married
wow.
right now. So taking the time to make sure that you find a great partner, somebody that's willing to partner with you, and you partnering with them as you all are growing and doing life together.
I bet the Players Podcast, no one thought they'd get some marriage advice from Kelvin.
Well, you started it. I'm not a marital counselor. Hey,
right.
so that is not what I do.
See
I'm
a professional if you need it, right? See a professional, but just wisdom. But now, when did this public speaking come? You matriculate from Mahalia to SMU.
Mm-hmm.
Office of Linemen, who I'm told by the Office of Linemen, they're the smartest group on the football field. All right. How did you end up, number one, discovering your gift of public speaking? And what was it like doing your commencement address for your graduating class at SMU, Office of Linemen? What was the pressure like?
You know, pressure is what you put on yourself. You know, the old saying, pressure either bust pipes or make diamonds,
right.
one of the two. And I think, you know, to answer your first question, when did it start? I was kind of forced into it. I was an introvert. I came from the country. You don't talk in the country. You know, you come, do what you need to do, and you keep it moving. But when I got to SMU, I got forced into being a captain of, not forced, but earned the right to be a captain of the football team. You got to be able to talk to other men. You know, I was involved in some things on campus, whether it's with, you know, the president and his commission on substance abuse, student affairs. I was the president of the SAC committee while I was on campus. So I was in this position of leadership where I had to actually talk to people. And then I was by people on campus kind of thrust into positions to, hey, we want you to come up and talk to the donors, or we want you to come and talk to the alumnus. You got to be able to fix something and get something right. So, you know, for me, it was one of those positions where I had to be put into those circumstances. And as I got put into those circumstances, realized that, hey, this is something that I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of started to matriculate. And then to speak at the commencement, that was not something that I was expecting.
How did you get selected?
Well, the thing is I graduated in 3.5 years because I wanted to get drafted. We're here at the draft. I felt that I can get drafted in 3.5 years. That wasn't the case. So I came back, got my master's.
Right.
And the guy who I was talking to, Dean Sharp, we have a very good relationship. But he was like, Kelvin, I don't think that you can play football, train for the NFL Combine, and get your master's all before the 2012 draft. And I looked at him, much like we're talking right now, and I said, I can get that done. And he was like, well, lay out a plan to show me that you can get this done, and we'll see if it works, because he didn't think that it can happen.
Where did you get this mindset where you thought it could happen?
Well, I had we talk about coaches. You talk about former players. I had a former player, Adrian Clem, got drafted by the New England Patriots, won 3 Super Bowls. He was my offensive line coach in college. He laid the plan. He said, Beachman, if you want to go to the league, here's how you get it done. 3.5 years. Get your degree. And this is, I'm taking summer school. I'm taking winter courses. Like, I didn't really take a break. I got it in, got it out. And he was like, you know, this is the plan. So I executed on that plan. He gave me 3.5 years, got it done in 3.5 years.
You listened.
I took the time to listen. Listening is a skill. Listen, when I do, you know, because when you talk about public speaking, it's speaking to corporates, it's speaking to other peers. Right. And then you speak to young kids. We all have to speak to young kids at some point. And I try to break it down into something so simple. Listening is a skill. Listening is a skill. And if I can't listen to people who have much more wisdom than I do, been around the block a number of times, have seen things that they've done wrong and things that they messed up on, I got to be able to take what they've told me and apply that. And Adrian took the time to tell me, hey, Beecham, this is how things are going to go. This is how the league approaches things. This is how you need to approach things during this college time prior to going to the league.
Right.
And I told Dean Sharth that, you know, at SMU, I was the School of Education, and told him this is what I wanted to do, this is how I want to get it done. He didn't believe me. I brought the proposal back to him. He let me in. I got the master's in 16 months, and the commencement came up. I got drafted, you know, and this time in 2012, the commencement was in May, and he was like, hey, Kelvin, I would love the same guy who told me I couldn't do it was the same guy who introduced me at the commencement and ended up doing that commencement speech.
So what do you tell young people? Because the dean, he had wisdom,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's thinking about, man, this is going to be tough. What do you say to guys? What's that tension where, okay, I'm going to listen to him versus listen to myself and your mentor, your offensive line coach, shared something differently? How did you do that?
I think you have to be able to balance conviction versus reality. For some...
Say that again. Conviction?
Conviction versus reality.
I call reality self-awareness.
Self-awareness.
Okay.
And the thing is, my conviction was, this is what I want to do. The reality that he felt was supposed to be my reality was, there's no way an athlete can play football and get all this stuff done in the time allotted that we have for him.
But why did you think differently? 7,500, Mahalia.
Well, here's the things, man. My grandfather was shot when he was 19 years old. He's been blind since he was 19. He's 94 years old. My grandfather raised 9 kids. My grandfather taught my dad how to work on cars. My grandfather taught me how to fish, literally taught me how to fish. A blind man taught me how to fish. So if a blind man could do all that, I can be able to do a little extra education, be able to figure it out, you know, get drafted, find a way to make a team. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, and I think sometimes we don't think about that enough, in the grand scheme of things, I'm playing a game, I'm going to get a little education. This man had to find a way to live life with no light, literally. And he's found a way to do it and is still doing it to this day.
So that culture, that environment.
Formative
years.
Exactly. Formative years. I saw it. And to see it and to say, I'm going to do X and then go and do X, I got to be able to do it because he showed me how to do it. Grandfather, father, mother, I have to go and continue that legacy. Now, I'm doing it in a much different way. Right. But my grandfather and my dad would always say, and, you know, I think this is something that happens within our community quite a bit, I want you to go further than I did.
Right.
My grandfather told my dad, hey, I want you to go further than I did. Now, my dad tells me, I want you to go further than I did. Now, I got a son, and I'm telling him, hey, son, I want you to go further than I did. Now, I'm giving him a high standard to attain to, but I want you to go further than I did.
It's interesting. I'm thinking about lyrics from Jay-Z and Lil Wayne's song, Mr. Carter. And Jay-Z lyrics in there says, young Carter, because Lil Wayne's last name is Carter. Mm-hmm. He says, young Carter, go father. If that's not why we here, then why bother? My dad said the same thing to me and my 2 older brothers. Your job is to take it better than I was. And obviously my 3 girls and my son, same way. As we now go to a fork in the road, You got involved in some philanthropic work. There was a city missing water. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, everybody heard about what happened with Flint, Michigan.
Flint, Michigan.
And
right.
I think that's something that we continue. You know, it's one thing to understand that there is a lack of access to water mm-hmm. in Michigan. It's another thing to actually do something about it. Mm-hmm. And there have been a number of players that have done something about it, and they're still trying to find a way to fix that infrastructure. But I was in Newark at the time. I was playing for the Jets at the time. And, you know, we talked about the tracks earlier in Mahia. Yeah. If, you know, where I was at in Livingston, New Jersey, Newark was nothing but, you know, maybe 15 minutes down the street. So in Livingston, we got access to clean water. In Newark, their pipes are bursting, and they don't have access to clean water.
Same problem, just more people.
Just more people.
In a different, bigger city.
In a bigger city, you know. You know, it was painful to even hear some of the stories of what was going on in Newark. And NFL headquarters is right across the pond,
right.
You know, right across the Hudson. So all this happening, going right on in the metro area of New York City, mm-hmm. you know, just felt the need to actually say something about it, do something about it, and try to find a way to galvanize. Just like as a nation, we tried to galvanize, and we did galvanize on what was going on in Flint. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to take the time to galvanize on what was going on there in Newark, New Jersey, and was able to partner with Pepsi, work with the National Football League, work with the Jets, and found a way to not only talk about the symptoms that were going on and provide access to bottled water there, but also talk about some of the policies and infrastructure that was taking place in that particular region and bring change to that particular region. So, you know, it's I think you talk about, you know, woke being woke now.
Right.
I think as athletes, when we come from our backgrounds, we know that there's some things that are still going on in our community. Mm-hmm. But as we get displaced, not displaced, but as we go to other communities,
correct.
We realize we have that same task to do something while we're there during that particular season. Whatever season, however long you're going to be there.
Right.
I was in Pittsburgh for four seasons. Whatever time I needed to do, I did something there in Jacksonville, in New York, now in Arizona. Whatever God has called me to do during that time, in that particular season, I need to take the time to do it.
But the consciousness of it, it's one thing, okay, I see a problem. Okay, they need water. Where did you get the wherewithal and the boldness to reach out to the league, to reach out to all these different entities at Pepsi that brought together to solve this issue?
Yeah, it boils down to relationships. And it takes time to build those relationships over time. You have to show up. You have to show yourself to be friendly. You have to show that you're willing to give a little bit, to get a little bit. You know, I had a coach in college, Frank Gans. He said, what you give will grow, what you keep, you lose.
Frank Gans?
Frank Gans was my coach in college at SMU before he passed away.
I've never played for him.
Yeah.
But when I got to the Rams.
The Rams, yeah.
The legend of Frank Gans.
And all the isms.
Right.
Yes.
Are you serious?
Yes, I was with Frank his last 2 years of life. Last couple years of life. And it was special. Put me on the Crowder sled, had me on the old Crowder sled, 6:30 in the morning. But he talked about that. What you give will grow, and what you keep, you lose.
Say that again.
What you give will grow. What you keep, you lose. And it's not about money. It's not monetary.
Correct.
It's your time. It's your resources. It's your network. It's your brain power. And you realize when you invest in your relationships, just give. Just take the time to give, and you'd be surprised what will come back your way. And it's been giving to other people for a number of years. And when I actually need to pick up the phone and make a call, hey, I need your help with this.
Right.
It was easy for me to give.
So establishing the relationships way before it was an ask.
Right. You know,
right.
You know, did a number of things for the Jets. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, this is something that I'm wanting to do. Would you all be willing to partner with me? At least direct me in the right place and where I need to go and direct me on who I need to be talking to.
I like to, when public speaking, you did your commencement address. What did you want your fellow graduates to remember from your speech?
Don't allow people to put you in a box. Don't allow stereotypes to be what runs your life. And that was something that I felt was done in that case mm-hmm. there at SMU. Because a stereotype for a black person on campus,
athlete, right.
Either playing football, you're playing basketball. Your brain isn't valued, and the intellectual prowess isn't valued. And I wanted to make sure that I portrayed that in the conversation that I had with my peers that day is don't allow people to put you in the box and don't succumb to stereotypes.
So now currently you just finished a Harvard class.
Yes.
Online,
yep.
Tell us about that. You're constantly growing, man.
Hey, here's another Frank-ism. Ongoing skill and technique development.
Ongoing
continuing skill.
Another profession call it continuing education.
Continuing education. Right. I'm just taking the time to continue to feed my brain, continue to feed my mind. And, you know, the pandemic happened last year. And just wanted to continue to use this time to better myself. So had the opportunity to take a class called the Crossover into Business there at Harvard Business School. Was excited. So, you know, anytime you put Harvard in front of something, it sounds special. But had the opportunity with about another, 100 athletes or so to take part in this program and learn from a famous professor, Anita, about, how to be able to look at a case, evaluate it, develop a thesis around your own conviction, and then be able to provide evidence supported with the exhibits, the numbers, and be able to be able to debate and have, healthy dialogue around different cases. Talked about Lady Gaga, talked about Jay-Z, talked about D-Wade, talked about Chip and Joanna Gaines and how they built their media and entertainment empires and what their process was like. So also understanding somebody else's journey from a business standpoint, it was special to see that.
Would most people be surprised how intellectually challenging the game of football is?
It is, especially when you've played on four teams.
Right.
At one point in time between New York, pretty much since I left Pittsburgh, I had an offensive coordinator and a new offensive line coach every year. So Jacksonville, I had two offensive coordinators, two offensive line coaches. New York, I had a new coordinator and new offensive line coach every year I was in New York. So that four-year stretch, I had to learn a number of different systems, a number of different languages. Right. And football language can be somewhat similar from team to team, but the way in which those systems are done are a lot different. You know, now code words are becoming a huge thing within the National Football League. You know, Reno and L.A., Pittsburgh and L.A., Boston and New York. Code words are becoming a huge thing. You got to be able to know those code words off the top, especially with in our offense now in Arizona, there's no huddle, so we're going, continuing to go, and trying to go fast. So you got to know those code words extremely well.
Give you an opportunity to talk to the legends that's going to hear this, fans are going to hear this, and your contemporaries, current guys. What do you say to them, your current group of current guys, with this opportunity that they have? Nobody knows how long it's going to be. If you had a 1 minute to say, hey, guys, what would Kelvin say?
I would say, first and foremost, we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. This game wouldn't be the game if we didn't respect our history and the people who actually built this game. Secondly, we are tasked with taking the game forward. There have been resources put in place by the NFL, by the NFLPA, by the legends. We need to take advantage of these resources.
And one resource you took advantage of was the player tuition reimbursement, with the Harvard class,
correct.
Wow.
To take advantage of the resources that have been fought for, that have been, we've been fighting for these things. How do we make sure that we don't become statistics? How do we make sure that we don't lose out on this great game? This is a phenomenal game. Make sure that we utilize all the resources that we have in place to not only better the game of football for our fans, but also better the lives of our players once we leave and transition from the NFL.
Quick hits. Favorite uniform played in?
Favorite uniform, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Biggest misconception of the big man?
Of the big man?
Uh-huh.
Which big man? That's a lot of big men.
No, what's the misconception of the big man, the big lineman, or the big... What's a misconception about you guys?
That we're very inquisitive. I think if you talk to any offensive lineman, you will be inspired. You know, offensive linemen don't get enough love. We don't get enough chances to talk like this. Y'all DBs and skill players, y'all get all the love, but you'd be surprised. When you sit down and talk to a big man, you will be inspired, you will learn, and you will learn about a particular industry that you had no idea about.
Favorite thing you do with your kids?
I love taking them to the country. I love taking them to the country. I just got some tractors and a Bobcat, so getting them on some of that farm equipment and
natural.
It's nothing wrong with, I'm all about technology. How do we get kids more involved in technology, understanding how important education is? But at the end of the day, I love taking them back to the country. You put on some old pants and some old shoes, go jump in the mud, try not to pick up the manure, go play with the cows, go feed the cows, go be outside, go learn how to be involved in nature.
So if the grid go out like it did in Texas,
oh, yes.
They can go out and still survive.
You better be able to learn how to survive.
Final question. Man, one of the most dynamic young quarterbacks in the league, you're blocking for Kyler Murray. Man, Kyler is every bit of somewhere, I'll generously say 5'11". How about that? Mm-hmm. What's it like blocking for Kyler when you're not sure where he is?
It's like a little jolt of lightning that's in a little bottle. You know, you never know what can happen. And, you know, the pressure that you feel is, I don't want to allow my guy to get close to him. Wow. Because if you do your job, he will make something special happen. And I've seen that, you know, in the year that I played with him, you know, and looking forward to playing with him a couple more years. You do your job, he will make you look really, really good. But he's special, man. He's hungry, he's competitive, really competitive, wants to be the best. I'm looking forward to seeing him mature and grow. He's special. And you having, you know, D-Hop on the outside. We just brought in A.J. Green. You got, you know, Christian Kirk. Right. That's going to be on the inside. We got more than enough weapons. All you have to do is stay clean. And that's our goal as offensive linemen. How do we make sure that his jersey is clean? When he hang up his jersey at the end of the game, my locker's right next to him. Uh-huh. So when I see that jersey clean at the end of the game,
you
I know
good.
We did what we're supposed to.
You looking forward to going up against J.J. Watt in practice? That should be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fireworks.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot of fireworks, but that's what training camp is for. Iron sharpens iron.
How often have you had a chance to say to your family, dad, grandfather, thank you?
I hadn't said it enough. Wow. I hadn't said it enough. You know, I would say in our community, especially, you know, what I mean in our community, that bond sometimes can be somewhat weak in communication. We may say it with our actions. We may say it with how we go about things, but actually saying that, I probably have not said that enough. So thanks for challenging me that, in that regard.
Well, if they hear this podcast, I want to tell them thank you. Because what you and Jessica are building, your family, and everywhere you've been, Players Coalition, thank you. Kelvin, this has been fantastic, man. Thank you for being with us. The best is yet to come. Keep up the great work.
Yes, sir, we'll do.
To provide feedback or request a topic for discussion, email us at nfllegends@nfl.com.